Welcome to episode 17 of Croc Talks. Hey y'all, welcome back to Croc Talks this week, where we have real conversations with real people. I'm your host, Hayden Wolf, out here in Orange County, California. I'm currently getting over the Game 1 loss of the Cleveland Cavaliers here in the NBA Finals. J.R. Smith, I love you, man, but I don't know what the heck you were doing to finish off that game. I couldn't sleep last night. I had to take some sleeping pills to get to bed because I was so upset. But we'll bounce back in Game 2. I'll actually be back in Ohio for Game 3, so I'll be cheering it on. I actually unpacked my J.R. Smith jersey and repacked my LeBron jersey. LeBron scored 51. J.R. scored about 10. So we're going to move on from that. This week, I'm talking to Amber Runyon, founder of 11th Candle Company, based in Columbus, Ohio. 11th Candle is a social enterprise partnering with Legacy, which is the nonprofit section of the company, to redeem, restore, empower, and equip those vulnerable to human trafficking, women in Columbus, Ohio, as well as third world countries like Ethiopia. In a very Instagram-perfect, filtered world that we live in, a company like 11th Candle and talking to Amber, I realize how important it is to be authentic. This is a conversation that I've had a couple times in my podcast where I'm trying to figure out, how do you be your real self in the social media world? And something that 11th Candle does very well is they are vulnerable. They show their bad sides, they show their good sides, because they value that, and they feel like if we're going to be ourselves completely, that's what people are going to support. That's what people want to see. They don't want to see a picture-perfect world, and I'd rather be myself. And that's what Amber talks about a lot in this interview. It is super cool to talk to her. She is a lady that is very inspiring, and not in a way that's so perfect and picture-perfect, but in a way that is attainable, in a way that you can see that she believes what she's saying, and she's going to tell you the truth about that. We also have our very first promo code here on Croc Talks. If you go to 11thcandleco.com, use the promo code Croc Talks, you'll get 25% off your full order. Thank you so much for listening. Please share this with a friend. Leave a review on iTunes. Enjoy this conversation I have with Amber Runyon.
Peace.
So today on... Today's May 19th on a Saturday. What kind of hours do you usually work? Are you usually working during the week? Are you doing things kind of all the time? Or how does that go for you usually?
I pretty much work all the time. I really try to be intentional on like Sundays to not work as much. But I mean, I pretty much just work all the time.
Yeah. Is it hard to not feel the need to have your hand in every bit of everything because it's still pretty new? Or do you have a good team around you?
I have a really good team around me. But I think like where it's easy to like when you have downtime to instead of like, you know, like, oh, it's Saturday, I'm going to put that off until Monday. I just kind of like try to check it as I can. But I also like make time to make sure that like I'm spending time with people that I love and that I'm, you know, getting outside and things like that. So,
yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it's a lot to try to balance everything, but I'll give you a quick background on my relationship with, 11th and Legacy, because I heard about you guys before you even reached out to want to be on the show. My wife went to school in OSU, and so we were both born originally in Ohio, and she went to school in OSU, and she has a background in nonprofits, and so her degree was in nonprofits, and she also had a really big passion for human trafficking. So that was kind of the reason she got into it, first reason she took the degree and everything that she had. So she actually one day came home with this really nice candle when she was in college, and was like, this is a really cool company, they're local, they're whatever. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I had it for a long time. We burned it out, and then for, I think, Valentine's Day last year, a couple years ago, I bought her another one. And then I was on Instagram one day, and I saw a message from you guys. I'm like, oh my goodness, everything comes full circle. So it was not totally new, but I've heard of you guys. So I'm very excited to come talk to you, because my wife has been following, like, she knows all about this stuff, and she was Columbus-based, so she's been following you guys, and on your Instagram and your Facebook, and she has friends that are still back there, so it's very cool to be able to talk to you, so I'm excited.
Yeah, we love stuff like that. Columbus is a great city for just social consciousness and kind of social justice, so that's really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. So I'll do the intro, but I'm talking to Amber Runyon, and I listened to an episode you did with someone named, it was called the Chicks Who Give a Hoot podcast. It was really cool. The lady's name that did it, but it was really well done. So I want to be able to follow some and probably refer people more to that podcast than trying to just ask the same exact questions and make you say the same exact things. But if you could just give a quick background of who you are, kind of like where you grew up, what was your focus up until you started 11th Candle? Like, what were you doing until you got to that point?
Yeah, I grew up in Columbus, and became a nurse. specialized in hospice and did a bunch of international medical work. And one of those trips landed me over in Ethiopia, where I fell in love with a little girl named Mulu. And I just kept going back for 4 or 5 years to see her, and then recognized that her village had some pretty significant needs. And one day in the middle of the day, I watched two little girls being trafficked in broad daylight. And they were blindfolded and kind of being led through the village by a man. And I asked him, I asked my translator, what are they doing? And he said, they're being sold. And I said, I'm sorry, they're what?
Wow.
And he said, they're being sold. And I could not wrap my head around what that meant. And I, you know, knew that I didn't want my little girl Mulu to be trafficked. But then I came back and did some research and recognized that if I brought her back to Columbus, Ohio, that she had a pretty good likelihood of being trafficked here as well. And so I just decided that I didn't want to live in a world where little girls and little boys could be bought and sold. And so kind of looking at how do we go from rape to redeemed, and found that employment was a huge issue in that spectrum of care.
So when you were first going over for those kind of missions and things like that in Ethiopia, was that just a job to you? Was that a passion of helping internationally? Or I guess, how did you land there in the first place? Because
I became a nurse, and it was kind of like, wow, I want to do more. I want to give more. And so naturally we think that the best way to do that is to go overseas. I don't necessarily but that's kind of what led me over there. And then that kind of just changed my view on what the world is, and that the world is much bigger than Columbus and much bigger than Ohio and much bigger than the United States. And that we're all the same, and we're all connected by just being humans. And so it was really kind of a really eye-opening experience for me.
Yeah. Well, I graduated high school 2012. I went to school for a year, and then I went and did missions with an organization kind of in Southern Africa. And I went there thinking I was going to change the world, and I was going to meet all these people, and then everything about them is going to be different, and I'm going to solve all the problems. And I was done after 3 months there, and was kind of realizing what I learned, or what it was exposed to me, was more for me than it was for anyone else. And it was kind of eye-opening of I kind of had this all wrong. I thought I was going to change everything, and my life was changed. And it's not I need to go there and make everyone look more like me. It is learning more. And it was very interesting to kind of be on the other side of that. Cause as big, as people in America that are white people that are successful, we just think everyone wants to be like us. And if we can make them more like us, we'll solve the problem. But that's not really realistic.
Yeah. No, that is a soapbox that I get on often.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So when did 11th officially, I guess 11th and Legacy, can you explain what the difference of those two are, and when did that kind of begin?
Yeah. So 11th is a social enterprise, and Legacy is a nonprofit. And so I formed them both at the same time in December of 2015. So we're about 2.5 now. And I formed them to work together. So the nonprofit provides the coaching, counseling, and employment opportunities. And the social enterprise provides the actual employment opportunities for the women.
So which idea came first? Because the ideas are, you have women in Columbus, you have women and children in third world countries, and you have candles. So how do you even get to connecting all three of those to making it running on a daily basis?
Sure. So I knew that we had to be able to provide a way for these people to live sustainable lives, and that just giving isn't actually helping. And so I knew that they didn't want our used t-shirts. They don't want our blessing bags. They want jobs, and they want their kids back. And so I created a way for us to be able to do that. The problem with that is that it's a really expensive task. There's a lot of expenses when it comes to employing women of this demographic, that they need the coaching and the counseling. They need trauma care. And those sort of things cost a lot of money. And then taking care of the kids over in the village and helping with microfinancing, that also is a lot of money. And so I created a social enterprise and a nonprofit to work together, because I believe that if government, nonprofit, and social ventures and or just for-profits come together, that's how we actually create sustainable change. And so I never wanted my nonprofit to be dependent upon dollars. I always wanted to be able to create something that could generate revenue so that the nonprofit didn't have to be begging for money constantly, though we really love it when we get $10,000 and $15,000 checks. We never cry about it.
Yeah, for sure.
But wanted to make for sure that I was setting it up. I was setting ourselves up for success across the board.
So when you first started, you started December 2015. What did the first month or two look like? Was it just scrambling to figure out what are we going to pay for? Or what are we going to do? How do you even begin starting that?
No, I mean, so we've been very fortunate that we were pretty successful from the beginning. There were a lot of people that really believed in what we were doing. There were a lot of people that really loved our product. And so really from the beginning, we had a lot of support and help and success. And so it was really just kind of clearly laying out what we think that we're going to do. And I mean, we're almost three and still yet we're kind of refining that and changing that. And so there really is, you know, the first year looks different than the second year, which looks different than the third year. But our first year was just kind of trying to get our feet underneath of us and figure out how do you run a company? I mean, I'm a nurse. How do you run a company? And what does that look like? And different things like that. So yeah, we've been very fortunate that we've had a lot of people support us financially as well as in time and talent that has really kind of helped us be so successful.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when you very first started, what was your goal? Because were you able to have the ideas of all three things connecting, candles, Columbus, women in third world countries, or did you just have one focus and now it's evolved 2.5, 3 years later?
No, in the very beginning, that was the plan. And so it's whatever is good for the women in Columbus, Ohio is good for the women in Ethiopia. So we try to mirror what we do in both countries and so that everybody's equally served. That's sometimes hard because of the culture issues and different things like that. But it was, that was the way that it's set up now has been the way that it was designed from the very beginning.
So what is a woman that is working in Columbus with you? What does her day look like? Like, what does she do with your company? Does she have a job? Is it more volunteer based? How do you kind of run that?
Yeah. So it looks like they work 5 days a week. Between 7 and 8 hours a day. And it looks like coming in and working and getting the support that we need. And we have staff meetings and we have, you know, coaching sessions and then they get their trauma care, through work, but outside of work. Obviously we want to keep work a really safe place for them to be able to work. And so they get offsite trauma care.
That's cool. One of the things that we were kind of talking about with traveling and being a first world person going into a third world and wanting to change people's lives and make it look more like you. How do you balance the two sides of a coin of offering relief for someone, like people that just really need a hand up when they don't have a chance? And how do you balance that with empowering people to do it on their own, like a kind of an equipping versus an enabling? Because so often we think we can just throw money or clothes or whatever to the problem and that'll solve itself. But at a certain point, people need to kind of learn how to do things on their own and they don't want you to fix all their problems. How do you balance that?
Yeah. So we believe kind of our four key values are redeem, restore, empower, and equip. And so we believe in empowering versus handing out. And we believe in equipping and giving them the rights. So all of our work over in Ethiopia is indigenously run. So I don't run any of those programs. It's naive of me to believe that I'm a white woman from America and I can tell them how to run their businesses and their cultures and different things like that. And so it would be naive of me to believe that I could do that better than they could. And then here, it looks like raising the women up and putting them through, you know, we do financial counseling and we do like nutritional counseling and they get mental health help and they get trauma care. And so it's really just teaching them how to like best do their lives because I don't live in their lives. I don't have five kids and I'm a single mom. And so how am I supposed to tell them what's best for them? And so it's really just kind of working through and leading by example. Both in country and overseas, leading by example from a business standpoint, as well as just from myself personally as a leader.
Yeah. That is, how do you manage to have a good perspective on that? Like, how are you so, I don't know, not, prideful about it? Cause one thing I've noticed even in the videos, the promo videos I watch, the Instagram posts, it's not the most pretty things that you, like most Instagram is a filter to make you look as great as you can to rack up the likes that you can. And some of the things you're talking about are, yeah, this first year was beautiful and the second year is going to be really hard, or there's been problems coming up, or I don't know what I'm going to do next, or I'm not really sure what's going to happen. Like, how important is the authenticity of that to you as a company and to you as a person?
I mean, that's everything. That's who we are as a company and that's who I am as a person. And I think leading from that place is what has made our company what our company is, and that we don't have it down perfectly and we mess up and I mess up. And I lead from that place with the women so that they too can recognize that they can mess up and that it's okay. And so we actually celebrate failures as a company. We anytime that something goes wrong, that we mess up, from the CEO to a woman in our program to somebody at our home office staff, staff, I bring in donuts and we celebrate that we failed. And the reason that we celebrate we failed is because we want to have a culture where people feel like they can try anything and fail and still be okay. And so from a place of transparency and a place of being authentic, that's who we are as a company. We are not going to get it 100% right, but we want people to know that, like, when they buy one of our products, that's like who we are as a company. So that is everything to both myself and the company.
Yeah, I think that's very needed, but also I'm sure maybe not for you. It might be supernatural for you, but it's pretty hard for a lot of people because on a day of Facebook and Instagram and news headlines and things like that, it's super easy to just want to be the best version of yourself every time you post a picture, every time you post a status. You want to look as great as you can.
That just feels like so much work to me. Like, I'd rather just post and be like who we are instead of having to put in. I mean, listen, I know a lot of people who do that, and I know a lot of companies who do that. And I'm like, when I watch it, I'm like, that's absolutely exhausting. Because here's the deal. Mm-hmm. I promise you, I run a company. And when I see that, all I see is you just put in hours and hours and hours worth of work to stage something that is not even remotely true.
Yeah, that's true. And so that time could have been put towards the actual company.
That's so much work. So I'm just tired and you know? So I feel like that's just the place I lead from. It's just like, look, this is who we are and this is where we're at, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that for sure. It's funny. Starting this podcast and going way back, when I was in high school, I was in a band. I loved playing music. I played the drums. Our band was fine. My least favorite thing about being the band was trying to promote ourselves and sell tickets and post about it on Facebook and things like that. It's something I'm awful at. And so I totally relate to, I don't know what I'm supposed to post. Like, I'm not going to be able to find the perfect filter to make this. I'd rather just work on the actual product and put the time into the thing that I'm working on versus the picture that I'm trying to paint with it. It's hard.
Yeah, and I love companies and people that are authentic. If you're an authentic company and you're an authentic person, those are my kind of people. And I think that people are really beginning to like realize like the difference between authentic and inauthentic, and that people really value that.
Yeah, I agree with you. It comes full circle. It is Instagram. You can see the most beautiful pictures you ever see. You can see these things, but there is something super appealing about someone that's actually going to be their self on a platform like that, because it's not the most natural thing to do.
Yeah, it doesn't. Just for the little, you know, disclaimer here, for anybody that's like, I'm going to try this, it definitely comes with its downfalls as well.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you, like, when does that come back to bite you in the butt?
Yeah, I mean, it comes with all sorts of criticism. I mean, we launched the video that you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. And we launched that video. And when we met with our videography team, they're like, what do you want to do? And I'm like, listen, I could dress it up and make it seem like it's been a perfect year. But the truth is, it hasn't. And it's been really, really hard. But there's beauty in that pain. And my video team knows me incredibly well. They've traveled with me. And they do all of our video. They do all of our photography. And they're like, are you sure you want to do that? Like, we know that that's who you are. And, you know, like they weren't, but they're like, that's risky. And it was risky, right? Because then people are going to be like, wait a second, this company doesn't know what they're doing. And I had it in my inbox for like 4 weeks and was like, I probably should post this video. We just paid a lot of money for this. I probably should post it. And I bring myself to post it because it was, what's so-and-so going to say about this? And what's this company going to think about this? But doctoring it all up and making it something else, I wouldn't have been able to post that either. And so I just had to like put it out there and be perfectly okay with it. And so sure, you get a lot of people that are cheering. You're like, yeah, that's awesome. And then you get a lot of people that are snickering and but that's life, you know, no matter what you do.
Yeah. At least you're being yourself while you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just put it out there and then walked away from my phone for, you know, 3 days.
Just let it be out there. Whatever happens, happens. Who cares?
Whatever happens, happens. Yeah.
Like you were saying, the last year, well, the first year you did, you're in your second and a half year. What's so difficult about continuing the pattern? Like, because I'm sure the first year runs a lot on adrenaline, a lot on, yeah, this is so exciting. I can't believe we're doing this. Like, I got married in 2016, and I'm coming up on 2 years of marriage in June. And the first year is super exciting. And now I'm starting to get into year two where things are going to be, it's great. It's awesome, but it's more routine. There's more real stuff. Like what does year two, year three look like for Legacy and for 11?
Yeah, I think that that's the thing, is that the first year you do run off a straight passion. And then the second year, it just becomes a lot harder. As you grow, growth is not a fun thing. I mean, it's great and it's exciting. It's exhilarating and it's really cool to watch your, you know, your numbers come in at, you know, six figures and think not my salary, but the numbers.
Yeah. Nice disclaimer.
At six figures. And so it is really cool to like see those sort of things, but like with any sort of growth, there is tremendous pain. And so the pain of a growing business, the pain of a scaling business, the pain of figuring out manufacturing, the pain of figuring out how best to serve these women, the pain of running an international and a domestic, a for-profit and a nonprofit. And so I think that the second year, passion has to be what leads you, but you have to have more than passion. You have to have a good team around you, and you have to have tenacity, and you have to have resiliency, and you have to have self-care put into place, and you have to know that you're not what you're making, right? I allowed myself to become so wrapped up in the company that I lost who I was, and it was a good long year back to figuring out what that meant. And so I think that that's why I think that that's the difference, is that yes, you do run off of just pure passion, but you have to be able to be rooted deep down in, but not lose your passion. Cause if you lose your passion, you're just toast, you're done.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Are you able to compartmentalize and be able to, like, if you go on a vacation or if you have a weekend, to be able to be like, okay, this is time to not think about it? Or is it hard to get out of that world sometimes?
Yeah, I used to not be able to do that, but now I can. What I try to do on the weekends is like take my email off my phone. I no longer get email notifications. I only check my email 3 times a day. So there's a lot of things I do like within the week so that I can be more present in where I'm at. But then I also on the weekends and stuff try to unplug, because you can't give from a place of just constantly being empty. And so I had to learn to like fill myself up, right? And I had to learn how to decompress, because I can't just continually crush brilliant ideas out of my head if my head is just constantly swarming with things. So to be able to find that quiet and to be able to find that balance, it was hard and still have to work on that. But
yeah, that's something I definitely struggle with too, is the idea of like, man, I wish I could just be going a million miles an hour, or if I could just try harder and keep trying harder, things are going to get different. But like, it finally hit me and I had to take some time to think about, I was constantly trying to think like, if I just can give myself to others 100% of the time, all the time, the world's going to be better. If everyone's just always doing that all the time, that's how we'd solve every problem. That's how everything would be solved. And I was freaking exhausted and unhealthy, and I wasn't nice to my family and my friends around me. I was freaking drained. And it took me a little while to realize like, it's okay to think about yourself. It's so, because until you are healthy, like you're saying, if you're not healthy, you're not going to be able to make anyone else healthy. Like, no one around you is going to be able to grow, because you are coming from a place of total nothingness. Like, you're just completely drained.
And your business is not going to be able to do that, right? So show me a healthy leader and I'll show you a healthy business. Show me an unhealthy leader and I'll show you an unhealthy business.
Yeah, for sure. It all starts right from there.
And so it all starts from there. So that is just 100% truth. When I was unhealthy and I was drowning and I was struggling personally and I was struggling professionally, our business felt that, right? And when I'm at my best, our business is at its best. And so if you have to be able to figure yourself out, and everybody's like, well, that, you know, you're putting yourself above everybody else. Well, yeah, I have to, right? That doesn't make me anything other than healthy.
Yeah. How do you, because what you're saying, yeah, it's healthy, but it also can put even more pressure on yourself, because you're thinking, if I'm not healthy, no one else is healthy. And that could be an endless cycle of, I really got to be healthy. I got to think about being healthy. I got to take care of myself. And how do you balance that as well? Because that could be even more pressure. Do you know, does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It totally does. But I think that once you get to a place of being healthy, once you get at a place of having healthy boundaries, and once you are able to like see what's good for you and what isn't good for you, that you're able to like knock that pressure out. So I don't really feel any pressure. I mean, I step back. So I do feel pressure, obviously, right? I run a pretty significant company. I have all of these things. But I don't feel the pressure that like, if I don't do this, that human trafficking is never going to be solved, right? I think that we get ourselves so wrapped up. If I don't do this, then all the babies in Africa are going to starve to death. If I don't do this, like, you have to be able to take the pressure off of yourself, and that like, I'm not the end all be all. But when I'm functioning at my best, I'm able to impact thousands of lives.
Mm-hmm. Because that is, that can be freezing. Like, it can freeze you in place too of, well, I'm not going to be able to save 100,000 people's lives. So what can I do? Because I feel that way, that pressure in my own way sometimes, but it really comes down to, can you affect one person? Okay, can you affect one person? That's good. Maybe that one person can affect another person and another person after that. Like, to put the whole world's pressure on your shoulders is going to kill anyone.
Yeah, and I think that, like, what we have to remember, too, is that we're just called to serve those that are right in front of us. And so, for me, some of my best work is done over coffee with somebody that's not even in our program. And some of my best work is cheering a friend on who just needs somebody to believe in her extra, in an extra deep way. It's being intentional and sending a note. It's things like that. And so people just have this, like, grandiose idea that I have to start a company and I have to change the world, which those things do change the world, right? I'm our company's proof of that. But really, you can change the world with really small intentional acts.
Yeah, for sure. What would you tell a person that is, let's take my wife, for example. She first went to college. Mm-hmm. She wanted to be a nonprofit. She wanted to work for a nonprofit. She wanted to do these things. She's currently working for a nonprofit out here in California where we live. But what kind of advice would you give a person that's like, I want to help, but I don't want to artificially help. I don't want to go on a trip where it just makes myself feel better. I don't just want to throw $100 to this homeless person and hope something is going to fix the problem. Like, what is a practical step that one person could do today to just be more of a whole person that's actually thinking about others in a realistic way that can solve issues?
Literally, love the person that's right in front of you. Right? The only thing that's ever changed the world is love, right? The only mm-hmm. thing that's ever really created true change in people in relationships is love. And so if you're able to do that to the people that are around you, then the people that they're around from a deeper, like, how do I, you know, create sustainable change? It's that you have to lead from, you have to figure out what your passion is. If you're not passionate, like, fully sold out for something, when you hit those hard spots, you're gonna quit. Because, and here's the deal, it is hard and it's going to be hard. It's not when, it's a matter, it's coming. And so you have to be so, right? You have to have, like, your reason why. For me is Mulu, and that every single time that it gets really, really hard, I remember that there are millions of Mulus who need somebody to fight for them. And so I think that people just get wrapped up and make it so much harder than it actually is, when really, like, today, you and I could get off this call and we could think of three people who really need some extra encouragement in their life. And we could either write them a note, send them a text message, call and ask them if they want to go to dinner. And that will radically change those three people's lives.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's cool and it's difficult because it requires you to do something. It can be easier to write a check for $50 sometimes than it is to have a conversation with someone that you don't want to. But
absolutely. And it's easier to think and dream about what I'm going to do instead of just doing something, because we just think that if we're not taking a picture with a bunch of orphan kids in a third world country, that we're not actually changing the world. We think that if it's not something that I can, if I can't Instagram this, then it doesn't really matter. It's the moments that you Instagram that matter. Those are the moments that matter. It's not like, what can I capture so that everybody thinks that, like, I've got all my stuff together. It's that, you know, you sit down and you have a glass of wine with a new friend and you talk about life and you become that much closer with that person. And then you know that person's stories and you can be more intentional about how you serve them throughout the next week. Hey, I was just thinking about you today. Hey, I know you have a presentation today. You're going to knock it out of the ballpark. Nobody sees that, right? Nobody needs this.
Yeah.
But those are the things. Think about in your own life, right? I bet now that while I'm talking about this, you're playing back in your head when somebody has done something to you, something like that to you, and how it has radically changed, how it radically changed your day, how it radically changed your relationship with that person.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can think of people for sure that you're having a shitty day, or you're just having a day where, I mean, especially because me and my wife moved out here to California on our own. We don't have kids. We don't really have family here. Having someone that is across the country, or a friend that is local that just says, hey man, how you doing today, or I hope you're doing well, or just a quick text message, that changes everything. That could change the whole day, that could change the whole week, which would then cause me to interact with people differently, which then changes that person's day. It is a cycle, and it starts with a very simple thing that can lead to thousands of other interactions, for sure.
Yeah, so I think people just really overcomplicate it.
Yeah, that's true. We like to overcomplicate things. We make it too difficult. With the model of Legacy in 11th, what kind of is there any kind of interaction that the women in Columbus have with the women in Ethiopia outside of just creating the candles? Like, do they ever get to have a relationship, visit, Skype, call, letters, like things like that?
Nope. The village throughout Ethiopia has been kind of under civil war for the last number of years. And so it's been really hard to have a lot of like consistent communication. When I travel kind of to or from, they'll kind of write notes to each other. And the women here in Columbus obviously get to hear the stories and see the videos and things like that. And then when I go over to Ethiopia, I will share stories with those women and show them pictures and the different stuff like that. So trying to bridge those two things together.
That's really cool. This question may be totally incorrect, but do you ever feel a struggle between balancing the women in the States and the women overseas? Like thinking, well, these ones have it easier. These people, if they really saw how these people live, then they wouldn't be complaining about this. Like, if not, don't worry about it. I just wonder, I feel like I would have that thought process sometimes. I think, well, people, when I first got back from Southern Africa and I heard the way people complained about things or things like that, I'm like, you guys don't understand what's really going on in the world. That's not a healthy way to think because you only know what you actually know, but that's something I struggle with for sure.
Yeah. So, when I started this, I had a plumb line that I went by with, which is if it's good for the women in Columbus, Ohio, it's good for the women in Ethiopia, meaning that they both, to the best of our ability as a company, they both get the exact same services. They both get the exact same opportunities, so on. And so that has kind of always been, we try to keep that as plumb as possible. From somebody over here, either our home office staff or myself or a woman in our program, we really, really, really kind of every day discuss how thankful we are that we have this opportunity. How thankful the women in our shop are the lucky ones. It's the women that are still on the street that we're working for. And every day when we come to work, we talk about that in circle, that we're the lucky ones standing in this circle. It's the women that are still on the street that are the ones that we're working for. We're no longer working for us. We've already gotten to a place where we have help and resources and so on. It's the people that are still on the street that need that help. And so that is a constant theme in our company, that we are always reflecting on that daily, that we are reflecting on that we are the lucky ones, that there are still people to be served, and that today's work is not for us, but for those that haven't met our, that haven't been able to be come into our program yet.
That's awesome. That's really cool. When I buy a candle from 11th Candle Company, what is happening? Like, where is that money going? Because you have women employed at the working with you, but then you also help women in different parts of the country and you help women locally. Like how's that being, you don't have to get into specifics obviously, but how is that being handled?
Yeah. So it's as simple as this, that the buying the candle provides the employment opportunity. So if people don't buy candles, we can't employ women. And then part of that money helps with the microfinancing over in Ethiopia, which allows us the more money that we can send over there, the more microfinancing that they can do. And it also helps provide the some of the foster care things in there. And so people get really wrapped up on this piece. And it's hard to explain to somebody unless you've got 35 minutes for me to sit down and show you my model and explain how all this works. And so what I really try to encourage people to kind of look at it is this, is that if you were going to buy a candle from Yankee, right, let's say, do you write into the CEO of Yankee and ask them where that money goes?
That's true. Yeah.
No, you don't. Right. And so for us, we're just super transparent in telling you like where our money goes. Right. And that the person who made this candle was once trafficked and now she's not trafficked anymore. She's in our program and working. Right. And so our money denotes what kind of world we want to live in. And so I think that so often the second that somebody feels like they're quote unquote doing something good with their money, they feel like they're owed an explanation. That's which true. From our company point, we are 1000% transparent. So ask any questions that you want to ask. But I really try to get people to change their perspective on that. If you're not going to call Target and ask them where they're spending their money, then we have to stop. We have to stop just holding, you know, not that I don't think that we should hold nonprofits and social enterprises. We should hold them to the fire and make for sure that they're transparent. Absolutely. But we also have to make for sure that we don't get so wrapped up in, you know, do you see where I'm trying
to go?
No,
I totally get what you mean, because you can see and you can tell by the conversation you're having, the way you portray yourself as a business, social media, websites, that you are trustworthy, that you aren't trying to pull one over on people. Like if you were, you would do a better promo video where you're talking about how great you are. If you were, you wouldn't talk about the things that you're struggling with in this conversation. But once you can kind of learn that as a person, and you can, and like you're saying, I don't know what Walmart and Target are doing with their money yet. I don't question it. But if you can tell a person you can tell by a couple minutes of researching the company, researching the Facebook, things like that, that they're trustworthy and that they'll do the right thing.
I think where the conversation, though, where I'm trying to point out is changing the tone around that conversation, right? For you, for me, for everybody. I used to say the exact same things. Well, like what, like we get all the time, what percentage of your money goes to help? Well, the answer would be 100%, because if I'm not employed as the leader, if our home office staff isn't employed, then we can't do the work that we need to be able to do to employ this woman. Exactly what percentage goes to this woman? Well, like there's no way to like really break that down. But what I'm trying to say is, like, as a culture, we've got to shift that if we're not questioning everybody where every single one of our dollars go, because I think that if we begin to research, there's this really nifty website called slaveryfootprint.com. And you put in like what you're wearing or what's in your house, and it tells you how many people you enslave by the products that you buy. But we don't think about that. But the second that there's a company like mine or Noonday Collection, or I mean, I can name 100 other companies that do the exact same thing that we do, and it's a different conversation. So all I'm saying is, as a culture, as a society, we need to change the way that we look and view our consumerism.
No, I hear it. I hear you. That's a very good point. Can you give a little bit more of an explanation of what you mean by microfinancing to like the third world country? Because I've heard the word a lot. I know it's a good thing, but I'm not sure what that even means.
Yeah, sure. So we have a really sweet video on our website that kind of spells this out in a specific story. And so, and I love to tell the story because it is just such a cool story that shows like the power of how you really can change people's lives. And there's this woman, we have a co-op of 16 women who, again, they run it, not us. And there was this woman who had a business, a laundry business, and she would go all over the village and pick up laundry and then bring it and then take it where there was a tap and then wash it and then take it back to her house and dry it and then take it back and deliver it. And so it wasn't like a really like, you know, by the time that she did all that, it wasn't super lucrative. So she went to the co-op and with a business plan that they have to come with a business plan and everybody votes on it. And so she went to them and said, listen, I want a tap into my house, because if I have a tap into my house, then I can do all of my services right here. And then people can drop their laundry off to me instead of me having to go out. So for $65, the co-op granted and loaned that money to her. And then when she pays it back, then they can like refinance it again. So micro just means like small, and financing, you're financing different projects. So it's small amounts of money that we're financing to these women so that they can be able to do this. So, but in like, I think it was 6 or 8 months, I'd have to watch the video to remember for certain, 6 or 8 months, she was able to completely turn her business into where she now employs people. So she's a really thriving, successful business, and she could cut the cost of it so other people could have the services that she provides, all because she got a $65 water tap run into her house.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. She had the business plan. She had the thing. All she needed was just a little bit. Just a little bit of money to get started.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's so cool. That is such an interesting idea because it's not just throwing money at a person that just doesn't need anything. It's someone that's thought through. It's someone that needs it because they have an idea, because they have a business, because they know what they want to do with it. That's very cool. When you first started, because I was listening, I'll point back to the other podcast, the Chicks Who Give a Hoot podcast. I was laughing. I was literally laughing out loud when you were talking about 11th Candle as a company, because you were saying you didn't even really like candles when you first started, that wasn't really a passion of yours to start the company. How did you, you say it on the other podcast, but quick snapshot, why candles? Why did you start with candles? Why is it a candle company?
I always think that's my favorite question on like podcasts or any other interviews, like what candle are you burning right now? It's not that I don't like them in general. I love our candles. I'm very passionate about them. I've spent hours perfecting these things. I could tell you anything,
sure, yeah,
about any sort of wax or wick or fragrance. I feel like I have like an honorary MBA and some sort of like physics degree or, you know, chemistry degree at this point, as much as I've Googled that stuff. But it was simple. I wanted to create a business where women could be employed. I wanted to create something where they crafted something and it wasn't service industry. It wasn't a service sort of industry, right? Because these women have been in kind of a service sort of industry their entire life. And so I Googled cheapest company to start, and it was a candle company. I was like, okay, candles work for me. Good news, it's a consumable and it has about a million analogies. So it worked out really, really well.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, it worked out really well for me.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm burning the lemongrass coriander right now. It smells great. It's probably one of my favorites.
Smells like you just cleaned your kitchen, even if you didn't.
I didn't, because I'm looking at my kitchen right now. It is not clean, but it covers it all up. It smells like it, exactly.
That's what I always tell people. Like, it smells like you just cleaned your kitchen. I don't know how else to describe that.
I guess I'm getting near the end. What do you hope 5, 10, 20 years from now for 11 Candle Company? Like, what do you think is going to happen, or how do you not let that overwhelm you, and how do you focus on the now while still having a focus of 10 years from now?
Yeah, so we just opened up our first retail space last month, and we are set to open up in Polaris Mall, which is a really big deal to
That's
be
awesome.
In a mainstream mall.
That's really
to be in a mainstream mall. So we're opening that up in September. And so I think that, you know, in the next 5-10 years, we're going to be in a number of locations from a retail perspective. I'm hoping that our nonprofit continues to grow and that we're able to change, you know, hundreds of thousands of lives. And in the meantime, you know, kind of grow as a person and have a family and some kids and be able to scale back from the company a little bit so that other people can step into my roles and really thrive. So our goal would be as many women come through our program that we find our leaders through that. And I would love nothing more than for somebody else to be like, hey, I think I want to be the CEO. I'd be like, here you go. And so I think that would be the goal, is that we just continue to grow, and that my hope is in 20 years that we actually don't have to do this, that human trafficking isn't a thing. But realistically, I don't think that will be truth. But I would love nothing more than for our business to be put out of business because human trafficking is no longer an issue.
That's awesome. How do you, I guess, with that last comment, how do you keep the perspective and the hope, knowing that it's something that it is the biggest fight you could possibly be battling? One of the biggest issues in the whole entire world since the world began. How do you keep a positive attitude?
Because I get to go to work every day and work with these women and watch them do really, really hard work and watch them change and transform their lives and get their kids back and get cars and get apartments and live good, healthy lives. And so if we never end human trafficking in my lifetime, we will have made a significant dent in things, and that Felice is now our production manager, and that Monica got keys to her first apartment, and that Mona got keys to her car, and that those different things actually did change the trajectory of those people's lives and the people that they love.
Yeah, that's awesome. I hope the same thing too. That's very cool. Yeah, this has been great. I don't really have any questions to finish up. Obviously, everyone can find you at 11th Candle Co., I'm assuming, on all social medias and websites and stuff like that, correct?
You got it. And then we give you guys a promo code, too. So
hey, that's awesome.
Give a promo code to all of your listeners.
That's very cool. I appreciate it.
People, if you listen to me for, 40-some minutes, then you deserve something off of
me. You deserve a prize for that. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Amber. This has been very cool. Thank you so much for the conversation. I'll enjoy this lemongrass coriander, continue to ignore my dishes, and just pretend like it's all clean.
Hey, that's what Saturdays are made for.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Croc Docs. You can find us on all social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Croc Docs. Send an email to Hayden@CrocDocs.com. Find old episodes at www.CrocDocs.com. Leave a review on iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes. We appreciate that so much. Thank you for listening. I will see you again in about 2 weeks.
Peace.